horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
A very good Wednesday, race fans. I was toying with a couple of options. I was going to say Florence Yall. It's Turfway opening day. The great Water Tower tagline. Actually, major water towers. I'm just occurring to me that you got that big Hallandale Beach water tower, the Rainbow Tower, which actually you can barely see anymore with all these high rises that they've built on either side of it. but at the end of Hallandale Beach Boulevard, opening day at both Tampa at Turfway and Gulfstream. Winter setting in, I think. In fact, Tina this morning when she went off to school, she opened the door and said, it's snowing. I said, come, no, it's not. There were some flurries. It stopped, but it's definitely wintry. We'll start in with the wintry mix. And a wintry mix of your favorite seasonal betting menu options. It's actually a lot of racing and quite a bit of, you know, nice options. Tampa, of course, today as well. Tampa's card is quite nice. And I should mention, because it's been sidelined, COVID issues, but Zia Park returns today. If you didn't see that, they've got a 10-race card, actually, that starts at Noon Mountain. And, you know, one side benefit of having racing put on pause for any period is it then produces at the entry box. And big full fields at Zia today, too. Really big. Yeesh. Full field in the opener, 10, or actually 8. It's a quarter horse action. Starts things off, you know, mixed cards. First four races are quarters. And then the thoroughbreds take over. And you know, 9 by 12 by 11 by 9 by 12 by 11. So a lot of good racing today. Parks today as well. And just before we went on the air, we heard from Will Schwartz, and Will, Mainline Racing. Will has got Wentz returning today in the 9th race in that second level allowance feature. Good race. And he's a price today. He comes back and he's had had procedure, and if he comes back running back to his good races, he's competitive in there. Not 8-horse field going 6. It's a good card at Philly today, too. So lots of action. And we'll talk to, in the first hour, we'll talk to Mike Lakow down at Gulfstream. Mike will set the table. Obviously, we talked with Mike Welsh on Monday. And, you know, one thing I forgot to bring up with Mike, which I'm surprised I escaped my mention, the Clocker Report. You know, Mike back down, and the team between him and Donald Harris, and I'm not sure. I'm going to guess that Dave Norton is contributing, but you know they pretty much have personnel at 3 out of the 5 locations: Gulfstream, West Calder, which is going to wind down, but there's going to be plenty of training action at Calder, you know, through the winter season, if they're going to be there till April 1st. And, you know, for those that aren't aware of the five locations, you got Gulfstream and the sister training facility, Palm Meadows. There's Palm Beach Downs, Del Rey, and then up, you know, further north, Payson Park as well. Payson, a private facility. And so you don't get sort of, in some ways, it's a little bit like the situation on the West Coast when it comes to San Luis Rey. And you just don't get the, well, you got to sort of speculate on the work tabs of those horses. And, you know, even, you know, they don't really have as much of a, it's funny, East Coast, West Coast was the origin of the Clocker Report concept. And then it spread, and, you know, only partial coverage really in Kentucky. You really don't get, it's amazing, you know, when you think about it, with the size of the circuit and the importance of the circuit. And there's plenty of people clocking, but in terms of a report, you don't really get as much of a, you know, a steady drumbeat of you know, the viewing and the, you know, the opinions of the works from there. So the Clocker Report for South Florida, available starting today. You could get it for the whole season. I'm sure when we talk to Mike on Friday going into the Claiming Crown card, we'll get another push in there, a reminder. And you can buy it for weekends, or you can buy it for the season. And literally takes one hit if placed properly to pay for any of the premium services, whether it's National Turf, Andy Harrington, when it comes to, you know, premium performance figures, Thoroughgraph, it's always worth it, because one extra insight makes the difference, at least to my way of thinking. We're going to talk, in addition to Mike Lakeout, to kick off Gulfstream's season, we'll talk to Ed DeRosa. I'm sure Ed has got Turfway in his crosshairs. We'll get Ed back into the Wednesday rotation. Sid Fernando, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale. Anxious to talk to Sid to get his thoughts about the two-year-old winners from the weekend and any further. I mean, the stud farm news continues to, you know, have a steady drumbeat. We're going to talk to Kevin Kilroy. This is a fun story. Kevin got an NHC seat over the weekend. We got to get back into our regular swing. And actually, I've got quite a bit of information I want to pass along. Because, you know, time, it's funny, time is running out. And I think we all collectively, because of NHC being delayed until August, I think we've sort of lost focus that the regular timing is still for qualification. You still got to qualify by basically January. So don't lose track of that. You know, the qualification for, you know, this year's NHC, you're going to start to, not start, you're already running out of racetrack when it comes to NHC. So we'll go over that too. And Kevin qualified, and it's a nice story because he was part of the group that was involved last year in what came to be known as Fourgate. The, what was it, seven players that used the number four in, you know, all or the majority of their pick and pray, contest selections, and all, you know, ended up tied, and, you know, it was a whole cause celeb. And we then, you know, had a subsequent, you know, playoff to determine, you know, which of those players would go forward. And Kevin was one of those players that was involved in Fourgate. And here it is, confirmation that, you know, he can pick and choose and, you know, and utilize the handicapping method to qualify. So we'll talk to Kevin about his horseplay and about qualifying, and I'm sure he's thrilled. Later, Seth Merrow, too. We got to get to Seth. And since I can't seem to get Mike Sweeney to visit, I've reached out to him a couple of different times. Long association with Scarborough Downs. I know Seth will provide a retrospective Scarborough, because he, you know, having his main roots, and every time he would go back and have an opportunity to go to Scarborough, he always did. And, whether it was actual, whether it was the racing or whether it was simulcast. So we're going to utilize Seth this morning to remember Scarborough, and, largely remembered for standard bred, but they had some thoroughbred action as well. So Seth will tell you more. I never went. I had an opportunity. I was there. I'm trying to piece that together. It goes back a few years, and somebody said, "Do you want to meet at Scarborough?" And I think I was up for a weekend in Maine or something, and I think this predates Tina. So I'll stop right there. Because these references to what is commonly referred around the house as the era BT, before Tina, it's like time didn't exist. my life apparently only started when I met Tina. Who else has to deal with that? Yeah. I know some of you are laughing because you know exactly what I mean. Pretty good. But I can't provide Scarborough perspective. Yesterday, so much fun with Bobby Newman. That was great, and it got a lot of nice reaction. People really enjoyed, some of the names, whether it was jocks or horses or trainers. And when Mike Lakow joins us here in about 6-7 minutes, Mike had a stint. When he kind of circled back into racetrack management, if I'm not mistaken, after he had a stint, he worked for a number of years with John Sikora at Hill and Dale, and he also stepped in and helped TRF during that difficult stretch. And then when he wanted to come back to the racetrack, I think the first job before he went out to work with Hammer at Santa Anita, I think his first foray was at Calder. I'm sure of it, actually. And so I'll slip in a little Calder with Mike too, actually, now that I think about it. So a couple of things we can catch up on here before Mike Lakow joins us. Late afternoon yesterday, the second 2-year-old stake at Delta. And wow. Big performance from Little Stitious. This was the Joel Politi, Tom Amos Ghost Sapper filly. And she just blitzed this group. Went off at a decent price, too. Went off, I think, as the third choice, 7-2. Diego Sainz. And very impressive. She won by 10. And I mean, all Saints did was, you know, kind of shake her up a little bit after attending the pace. Paid 880. So I don't know if she's a Serengeti Empress for Tom and Joel Politi, but certainly he's got to be a pretty nice, you know, a nice feeling with the big horse retiring. And this was actually a filly that they paid $190,000 for at Keeneland. Mercedes Stables bred, and it has not missed a check in five starts. Two wins, it broke the maiden last time. Took four tries to break the maiden, but had been very competitive. A couple of seconds in a third. And notably, they're pretty funny. At this time of year, and given what a crazy season it's been, it's pretty remarkable. This is a filly that has made five starts, a two-year-old, at five different racetracks. How about that? Debuted at Indiana, then went to Ellis, then came to Churchill, and then broke the maiden at Keeneland, and now wins a stake at Delta, and probably now moves back to, you would think, would move back to Fairgrounds for whatever's next for Amos. No figure yet, but I'm going to guess that this is in the high 70s based on yesterday's winner in the boys race. That Privé Moon for Brad Cox and Judd Mond got a 77 for Privé Moon, and the filly went a tick faster, so guessing 78 79, so bordering and this was two turns, you know, seven furlongs on the oval at Delta. So you would think that Amos then goes, you know, to maybe to the next step and jumps aboard the Fairgrounds Oaks path with Little Stitious out of a Quality Roadmare Broadway play. Color of Dawn second for Cox, 10 lengths back, and then another length to Extrema, who was third for Keith DeSormo. That was the My Trusty Cat. All right, so there we go. There's your report from yesterday. Yeah, you could go ahead. Actually, that's fine, Deja. You can call Mike now. That's fine. That'd be good. All right, so we'll reach for Mike Lakow and get into Gulfstream. I was looking today trying to maybe pick a couple of spots. I know with Ed when we talked Turfway, the Turfway card is really competitive. I looked at a handful of races, and it's kind of eye-crossing. And I'm anxious to hear what Ed's plan is for the Tapita. And I think, you know, one element, given, you know, the mixed lineup you get of outfits, I would think that the horses that ran well at Presque Isle this summer are worth extra attention moving to the Turfway, the new Tapita at Turfway. Well, as we said to start the show, Turfway kicks off tonight and Gulfstream this afternoon. Mike Lakow joins us from Hallandale Beach Boulevard. Mike, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm great, and I said it really is. I think we have to accept the fact that winter is here. If you're opening and Turfway's opening, we can't stop it now.
Yeah, winter felt like it was here this morning as well. I think it was 49 degrees when I woke up this morning. It's just a cold front. It will go away shortly, though.
Well, that means, as Casey always points out to me, that means that the fur coats are going to be out in Miami when it hits that temperature.
Yeah, but let me tell you something. All my years at Aqueduct during the winter, 49 was like a summer day.
Exactly. And of course, when the sun sets and there's a certain wind blowing in off of Jamaica Bay, it could be 49 in July.
Yeah, one right of the coldest spot. Places in the world.
Along with Belmont in the shadows when it gets cold. Well, you hightailed it down there. Before we talk about the season, it occurred to me, I was kind of free-forming the start of the show, and I mentioned you were going to visit. Yesterday, Bobby Newman was with us, and on Monday, Mike Welch, and we talked Calder. And when you came back after working with TRF and Hillendale, you had a stint, right? You spent a year, 2 years at Calder?
Yeah, I was a steward at Calder. I actually enjoyed it. I liked to stand there, and it was a good experience for me. I was just finished stewarding in Dubai, and it's not the same, believe me. but it was good for me, and it gave me experience, and I appreciated having the opportunity to do that.
I distinctly remember, you know, seeing you, you know, in that beautiful paddock. I suppose you could address this too. There is some ramifications, obviously, and you won't have to worry about it until next fall. But how, you know, in your imagination about how to handle, you know, the 2 months of racing there, you know, what's the initial feel, Mike, for, you know, what'll happen next November, October?
Well, we have race has a day scheduled, 3 or 4 days a week. We're still working on it at Gulfstream Park. No turf.
Hmm.
We're considering possibly putting in an artificial surface on the outside of the turf course.
Interesting.
And, you know, we're just, you know, you say it's far away. It's really not. You blink and it will be upon us.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of thought and discussion going into the next October, November.
No, that's it. I had seen some mutterings about, you know, the potential to just, you know, lay off the turf, let it get its own freshening. And, look at how Churchill dealt with the last 10 days of their meet without grass. And interesting. All right. Well, we'll.
Yeah, look, Steve, it's amazing that 75% of our horses are now turf horses.
I know.
The game has changed. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It may be a good thing. Horses recover quicker, and it's fuller field size for the handicappers. So we're addressing it.
Well, all right. In the meantime, we've got the winter season, and some of the early trappings are set. You'll draw today for the Claiming Crown card on Saturday, and then it won't take long. Stakes card the following Saturday on the 12th, and we'll be right into the 3-year-old season toward Florida Derby and Fountain of Youth and Holy Bull. Give us a thumbnail sketch, Mike, of you know, how you expect the season to unfold.
You know what, Steve? I'm not an optimistic person. I'm usually very low key, but I really, you're laughing because you know me, but I truly believe we're going to have an outstanding meet. The barn areas are packed solid, and we have some new trainers. Brad Cox is taking a full barn, Jack Sisterson, just to name a few. Some trainers from New York that haven't been here in a long time. And I'm incredibly optimistic.
Well, you know, obviously the early season here, I mean, there's still, of course, a big weekend coming in New York, and some advanced horses, you know, horses that ran in Kentucky and New York over the last few weeks and after Breeders' Cup, you know, came down. There's also horses, of course, that get sent to places in Ocala to get freshenings, and, you know, then, you know, the intense action, you know, will start to unfold. You know, one aspect I'm seeing discussed, Mike, is the, you know, the difficulty of not being able to have, you know, the general public be able to attend the races. Owners though are, you know, are able to come.
Yeah, so owners and trainers are, and you know, the protocols keep changing. We have weekly meetings, and hopefully, before you know it, we'll be open to the public. But we have to be safe, and we owe it to the industry to be very tight right now to keep racing going.
No, fair point. And you know, when you see how much you know, other organizations and sports have struggled. Not that there haven't been episodes. I mean, obviously, Golden Gate, Zia comes back online today. They're resuming racing today. I mean, there, you know, there is obviously, you know, potential at any point, and especially with, you know, this thing raging really everywhere. So the precautions and all the testing and you know, keeping people apart and the jock room. I mean, how's the jock policy? I haven't seen that addressed.
Well, we're separating the jockeys as best we can. Some are going to be in the women's jocks room. Some are going to be in the trainer's lounge. We built an outside area where we used to have a horse scale. Actually, we still do, but we're not going to use it. We're going to put jockeys in there as well. And the jockeys get tested twice. Once they report to Florida, they take a COVID test. That's day one. Day five, they take another COVID test. With both negative results, they can ride the following day. So for Saturday, well, Luis Saez is already riding, but for Saturday, we have Lee Peru and Robbie Alvarado. They're going to be named on the program, and the other riders are coming shortly thereafter.
So if for instance, if Kentucky or New York jocks or even West Coast jocks wanted to come in, as long as they come in 5 days ahead of the assignment, they create a window and a operating scenario to be able to, you know, to ride, even if it's just a weekend.
Right. You know, we're going to address Fountain of Youth Day, Florida Derby Day, Pegasus Day. It may be different. We may, for a Mike Smith or a type of jockey like that, we may just keep them isolated, only allow them to ride a couple of races on a particular day, but they would still need a COVID test either prior to leaving their location or when they arrive here.
Interesting. Everybody handling this, and you know, after some initial, you know, couple of initial issues, it does seem that you know, the habits and practices are being instituted successfully. I mean, they're really, you know, we really haven't had some of the issues that cropped up, you know, early on, and I you can understand the riders and their agents, you know, plugging into the necessary precautions.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's certainly a bit of a hardship, especially on the agents, and I can speak because I was a jockey agent,
that's right,
of course, but, you know, not to be able to go into the barn area, see barns, see trainers, speak to owners at the races, it puts a little bit of a strain on the job of being an agent. But on the other hand, I was on the road driving from barn area to barn area to racetrack. Now, at least the jockeys can stay home, stay put, have all their work on their desks, and follow up that way.
Hmm. Looking at the schedule, I mentioned the first weekend of graded stakes comes a week from Saturday with the Fort Lauderdale, the Harlan's Holiday, the Rampart, the Sugar Swirl, and the Mike Charmer. Mike, address the how you handled the purse accounts and you know, that element of setting up the condition book and how, you know, things were going to be structured from a purse standpoint.
You know what, we made some changes in the stake purses, most of them unnoticeable. The Florida Derby went from $1 million to $800,000. It's still a lot of money. Other races were cut that really didn't fit into the schedule. They were, I wouldn't say they weren't needed, but we have some races to take their places. We spread out races a little bit more. And just skimmed a little bit off the top. I didn't want to touch the overnight purses. That's where the bread and butter, the claiming, the allowance, the main races are, and that's best for the horsemen. And look, there may be adjustments to come. I'm not sure, but right now we feel pretty confident that we're set.
Well, and of course, the big days that are pretty much etched in stone these last several years. Early on, Pegasus weekend would be January 23rd, Holy Bull, and the three-year-old fillies and boys on the main and on the turf. That comes on the 30th. Then at the end of February, Fountain of Youth Day, Devona Dale and Gulfstream Park Mile, etc. And then Florida Derby Day on March 27th. And I suppose fingers are crossed, Mike, that, you know, as the winter unfolds, and I suppose as vaccines get rolled out, do you hold out hope that some public attendance might be, you know, plugged in at some point along the way here?
Exactly. That's the goal, and we're going to just keep watching and waiting just like everybody else in the country, if not the world. One thing, you know, the weather is so important to our racing here, and I just, we had so much rain October, November, so much rain. I can't imagine there being any moisture left in the air, because we had, I think, 28 to 30 inches of rain here in October, November. We were off the turf 91 times during the Gulfstream Park West meet. And I you know, we're due for some really fantastic, extraordinary weather.
Well, you know, I know that there's any number of regulars that, you know, so look forward to coming down to South Florida to spend, you know, spend the season. And even if they just, you know, have to play from home and, you know, play from their patio or poolside, or, you know, occasionally get to come over for horses of their own that run and so forth, everybody'll make do. I mean, the industry has done an amazing job making do, you know, really since this whole thing began.
Yeah, one thing, you know, Gulfstream Park really ran through the worst of it, and we just set our protocols so strong, so tight, we didn't miss a day from start to finish. So HR department, health and safety department, even the horsemen, everybody stood together, and we got the job done.
Well, and there was some very anxious, if people don't remember, I mean, in March when this thing, you know, really raised its hoary head, there was real nerve-wracking element to whether you were going to get Florida Derby Day in. I remember that being a real touch-and-go scenario.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's a shame the fans didn't get to experience it on track. The card for Florida Derby Day was extraordinary. And it was something to see Manny Franco jump off the Tizzalaw and have no clapping, no cheering. It was different, to say the least.
No doubt. Speaking of different, Mike Lakehow with us, opening day at Gulfstream. The familiar faces, of course, with Jason and Ron Nicoletti and Acacia Courtney back after her extended stay in New York. Looking forward to the presentation on a regular basis. In terms of betting menu and any nuances, or, you know, pretty much things pick up where they left off.
There is a change. The 5-6 minute drag between post time and leaving the gate is no longer. So when we set post times, it's going to be basically when they're going in the gate.
So the published post times, you guys are going to commit to really holding, you know, barring obviously shoot changes
exactly.
You know,
I mean, a mandatory six, you know, will take some time. But, you know, we're going to try this, I think it's going to work.
Well, that will be well received by players. That's to be commended. Excellent. Mike, I would love to say I'll see you XYZ soon, but I just, you know, I don't know yet. I was talking to Hammer, in fact, the other day about, you know, and Jay Pribman about, you know, setting up a schedule and just not knowing, you know, how freely to travel. It's a, you know, went to Derby, went to Breeders' Cup, but it does feel, you know, like everybody's going to try to, you know, I don't want to say shelter in place again, but be very cautious right now. And you know, we can certainly follow things from afar.
Yeah, I mean, we have to be cautious. But again, it will change, hopefully sooner than later.
Well, having Gulfstream back adds to, you know, a lot of interest and pleasure. And Mike, best wishes to everybody for a safe, successful season. And, you know, don't talk between now and first of the year. Best wishes and happy holidays.
To you
Hope
too,
to see
Steve.
You soon.
Thanks for having me.
Not at all. It's great. Mike Lakow, everybody. And there was a little bit of a nice tidbit. Those published post times, and to start the meet anyway, they're pretty much on the evens. They're right on the top and the bottom of the hour, like today, 12:35, 1:03, 1:31, 2:00, 2:30, etc. That's great. We'll stay here, and Ed DeRosa is going to join us. And in fact, Ed is joining us. Ed, good morning.
Good morning.
How was your Thanksgiving?
Wonderful, low key. That was my day away from the track. So it was good to be at home with the family and just actually have a full day off.
Nice.
get away from the dogs here. The mailman must be coming back.
It's funny. I'm just thinking about some of your you know, social media stuff. I don't know if I've seen a picture of your dog.
So we have a miniature dachshund, and then my mom helped out with EJ this morning, so she brought her dog, and we have a cat too, so it's a zoo today.
I'm confused by the term miniature dachshund. They're not small enough to begin with?
Apparently there's varying sizes now. That's what her breed paper said way back when, but her name's Roxy. She's a cutie.
Our neighbor, our Tina's very good friends, the Villafuertes, and they've got a dachshund named Manny, who is, for whatever reason, has never liked me, when he sees me, when he hears my voice, I don't know what it is, he goes nuts and becomes like a yapping lunatic. And so I've taken, after years of trying to, you know, be low key around him, I've gotten aggressive now, and I torment him and I goad him because he's so annoying. It's unbelievable. Manny, I would go crazy if
you sounded like Seinfeld there, Manny.
too funny. All right, well, now you're going to have to put a picture up, Ed, so everybody can see Roxy.
Yeah, we'll do. Absolutely.
I'm glad you mentioned you had Thursday off, but then Friday, of course, Clark Day, and you know, the busy weekend. Stars of Tomorrow too, and I did get a kick out of Marty. There was it Saturday that it seemed like every trainer that you tabbed pre-race produced a winner.
Yeah, 5 for 5.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
Four trainers, and we had Braxton Lynch on for BBN Racing. So, the rep for each horse won. And, they weren't all my picks necessarily. So I like to mix it up and try to get some different voices on the simulcast. So I'm not always looking to talk to my top pick or the favorite, and just happened to work some magic on Saturday.
That's pretty funny. I saw where, and it, you know, it, sometimes it occurs to you, and sometimes it doesn't. But when Marty tweeted that, he said Ed DeRosa, pre-race interviews on fire, and I thought, oh my gosh, yeah, it connected those dots. A couple of thoughts. What struck you? I mean, you could start maybe with the Clark, some of the 2-year-old action. What did you come away with?
The Clark. I think there's been some Bodie Express fans and even believers out there, and hopefully they found some reward. A decent price. I mean, his numbers.
Yeah.
I wasn't by any means completely shocked. I had gone in a different direction on top and fallen for, sort of the way the Dirt Mile had played out in the Breeders' Cup, and thought the two coming out of there, having to chase Koenigs go, might have an advantage at this trip. And that, I mean, they ran okay, third and fifth, but Bodie Express certainly figured, and I was against Code of Honor and got a little aggressive. I pitched him completely, and at one point it looked like he might win, and he was, clearly second best, or at least in the mix of the good runners. So I whiffed on the race because of that, but it's interesting, and, Bodie Express has every right to get better with age, so looking forward to seeing what lies ahead for him. I'm guessing the Pegasus.
Yeah, and we talked to Gustavo Delgado Jr. On Monday, and I was really looking forward to it. And that was pretty much my best opinion of the weekend, frankly, of the whole holiday period. Because to me, it seemed like there were three horses to focus. Code of Honor obviously was the centerpiece, but there were two horses in there. Bodie Express and Mr. Freeze, that had those races, Ed, that when you're looking at past performances and you're looking for figures that are going to win a race like this, to me, they were the three A's. And I really committed to that as the focus. And it made for, a very productive approach. And I thought the thing, considering the Code of Honor ends up second, and Owendale was, one of those exotic candidates that you absolutely were going to include because he's been consistent all year. And the thing ended up paying, it was $400 for a dollar try.
And I think, we mentioned this before with other races that draw that field. There's just such a huge difference with 14 and 13 horse fields,
yeah,
versus,
yeah,
even 9 or 10. And unfortunately, we're conditioned to thinking of those as full fields, and they're not. Full is 14 most often. So it's the exponential growth, and, people use all a lot, and they box 5-6 horses, and that just adds up to a lot of dead money when it's 14 horses instead of less, and definitely saw that play out even with the obvious chalk in second.
On the card, before we talk about the 2-year-olds, I'll tell you who ran a very big race, and it hasn't been given a lot of attention because there was so much to digest from the weekend. Hog Creek Hustle winning that allowance was very notable, and you got to give Vicky Foley credit and Corey Lannery credit. I have not read or heard as a follow up how much planning there was involved to have him up close, but I knew on the backstretch. I mean, I had him included, but I didn't have him, in the cross country ticket. I didn't have him as prominent as I would have liked. And he, I thought, won very well on Friday.
Yeah, that was a fantastic race, and to see that extra dimension made augur well for what we might see from him going forward. The talent was always there. We've noted on the simulcast a couple of times, seemed to be wind shy and a horse who comes with his run but misses. And then to see that those tactics employed, certainly to a winning effort no less, certainly had to excite his connections and backers.
Yeah, she's, let's see what you know, what Foley wants to do next with Hot Creek Hustle. Through the winter, another performance we should touch on, because I haven't brought it up yet, was that Silver State effort on Friday early on the card. How about that?
That was nice. Looked like he won as he pleased, and you know, ended up 4-5. So unfortunately, nothing to get too excited about. I mean, if Dennis's moment in there, I guess he would have been 1-5. But you know, you got a little bit of a boost if you were a big time believer. But I have to think stakes next for that one. And I didn't hear going to Oaklawn or Fairgrounds, but they both have similar patterns for the older horses. So. That was, future starts Friday for the 2-year-olds, but I definitely think we saw some good things to come in 2021 from Friday's races as well.
Exactly. And, if you didn't, note it, it's the third race from Friday, Silver State, a hard spun, for Steve Asmussen and, a 101 buyer, in this spot going 7/8. On to Saturday and, the two-year-old stakes, they get the headlines and Travel Column and I suppose Clairiere. I thought, considering it was her second start, Ed, that was a very promising next step in a stake debut. And when it came to the boys' race, you know, Keep Me in Mind, I think I picked them third and I wasn't against them by any stretch, but, I was hoping to get a price involved. But in retrospect, you really kind of realize this was a horse that he was 2-1 and he made 2-1 look good, afterward.
Yeah, and I was on him. The numbers just really seemed to fit. And I thought, maybe we'd get a premium given he's a maiden and, big balloons and the grade ones behind the Central Quality. And Deodoro isn't, necessarily a sexy trainer, 2-year-old yet. He said in the pre-race interview, they're hoping to build toward these races with more of their stable. So, I was impressed. I actually bet him in the future wager. I was happy with 20-1 and then 19, and was surprised to get that. I figured off the stakes when he'd take a little bit more money, but with Life Is Good and unbelievable to me, 5-1.
Yeah.
That meant you were going to get prices elsewhere beyond Essential Quality. But those deep closers, don't necessarily love them for the Derby. That's not my typical profile when looking this far out. But at the same time, I don't feel like he's ever plotted. He just kind of comes with that burst turf style, and it's gotten there. So, we'll see, but I was impressed. And I think because of the connections, there might be a premium down the road as well. I think it's going to take a while for people to buy into this horse, but from what I've seen at Breeders' Cup and at Churchill with my own eyes, he's a runner.
Yeah. And, every indication style wise and the way, the way he moves that, the mile and the eighth and beyond absolutely suit him. Travel Column took up a nice next step, and obviously the story, the major story here, was McPeak's filly and the opportunity to go against her, and I don't know, Ed, I thought that, and I talked leading in that, there were enough horses that enough of these fillies that were close enough, with development to challenge Simply Ravishing. And then on top of those challengers, including Clairiere and Coach, Farsighted packed it in early. And I thought Alexandria was okay too, the Ohio bred for Tim Hamm. But on top of Travel Column and the like, Simply Ravishing didn't run well. And at no point did I think she looked comfortable or, like she was going to go on with it. It was obvious off the turn that she was, you know, that she was not going to be competitive.
Yeah, it's for those who were against, as you said, I would say Turner for home. They obviously felt really good by then, and I would even say dueling with that. Never really looking comfortable dueling up top with the long shot. Seemed to set things up, and Clarier made first run, and Travel Column got there. And I thought Coach ran well. I mean, I thought that was a pretty game effort for a filly that, you know, just keeps, I don't want to say knocked, but I think there's a definite thought that maybe she's not a grade one type, but, you know, this wasn't a grade one. She showed she at least fits with these, and have to think there's, you know, a graded win that Brad can sniff out for her and Rick Kieber. But the top two from an Oaks perspective are definitely pretty exciting. And I don't think we've seen the last of Simply Ravishing. Might just need some time. But this was a solid renewal for sure. And for Clarier, I actually think maybe a little more upside there. I mean, like you said, second career start, made a powerful move, just got collared late. And I have to think that the top two are going to be major players on the trail.
80, for those that didn't see the figs, you know, the fillies were faster, 85 for the winner, and 80, and these were actually adjusted on the buyer scale. They both came up a tick or two after Sunday morning. But the rest of the card, we should touch on, you know, at least Mandaloon, who looked pretty darn good, winning at 7/8, the allowance. There was somebody else too that I thought ran okay and showed maybe it was one of the two turners.
I'll mention Warrior and Chief, who absolutely shocked me at 32-1. But we had Kenny on before the 8th race or 9th race. It was the race before the Goldenrod. And, you know, I said, oh, you know, congratulations on the early win. Already got one under your belt. And he said, you know what the key was there? We finally got this horse on the lead. And, you know, I guess Hog Creek Hustle style, you know, they tinker and get the right tactics to get the job done. And Warrior in Chief was an absolute X for me, even at the price. I just didn't figure that horse at all based on the competition. But, you know, an aggressive ride, and Robbie got there. So, you know, that's what happens. But I have a sense that maybe people see that 32-1 next out and maybe not buy it because he was a long shot. But, you know, based on what Kenny said, I'm more inclined to believe it, especially if the price is right next time.
No, that was a nice performance, and there was also, that was a maiden breaker. There was the allowance win by Hidden Stash, the Vicky Oliver, and it's so funny. I think it was the week before. I think it was the previous week in talking to Marty, and Vicky Oliver came up, and she had been winless at the meet, and then she, I think she won three or four, like over the last 5 days of the meet.
Yeah, she three for sure. And maybe, well, I guess I can look. Since I brought up the card we were talking about.
Yeah, she had the card on Sunday.
Yep.
She had
Hindsight.
Yeah.
On Thanksgiving, and that was it for the meet. Those were three. So after a rough go, she put it together.
Well, and she ran 1-2 in which of was that in the 2-year-old race on Saturday? Was that Hidden Stash and one of those races? I know she ran 1-2 because I had handicapped it and. Maybe that was
CFD like water behind.
That's what it was. Yes, yes.
At a price,
and I included that horse actually. Be like water because there was real sibling strength. There was precociousness involved with Be Like Water, and that filly ran very well. And her, you know, she was giving away experience to her stablemate, Hindsight, the Pioneer of the Nile. It was a terrific. Terrific 4 days, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, closing out at Churchill. And there was even a good 2-year-old performance of note, that Roderick for Wesley Ward. That was a 92 buyer for that Into Mischief colt.
Yeah, he looked great, and I actually tried to beat him, not with the other shortish price, but nevertheless, I mean that was powerful, and you know I could see the top three from there making some really spicy marks, probably turf filly anyway, and she was facing males there, so definitely tab that 2-year-old race going forward.
Well, now you get a little bit of a freshening, and the opening day, Ed, at Turfway, had Chip Bach on yesterday, had a really fun visit with Chip. They're gonna have a, I can't even call it a tent meet. I don't know.
Concrete slab meet is what I'm calling it.
There you go. I guess they're going to run Jimmy McInerney up a flagpole to call the race.
Sounds that way. The infield suite style, like you see in the infield at Derby, I think is the plan. But
okay. Well, the action looks like it's going to be good. There's a number of horsemen who are staying home, and then you fold in, you know, some of the other, you know, regional players, and I see some of the Presque Isle outfits, you know, setting up shop. Some thoughts about how you're going to approach Turfway, and most notably with the new surface, because you know, for a number of years there's been horses that come back for the winter, and you look to them, and if they liked that, you know, the remnants of poly at Turfway over the years, that's not going to necessarily be a formula this year. And in saying that you were going to join us, I did speculate on the Presque Isle horses that at least have got Tapita experience.
Yep. No, that's 100% a starting point for me, is the experience, and even, you know, preferably success on that surface. I don't think I saw many Woodbine shippers. Sometimes we see some Golden Gate horses around the stakes. We've seen them ship in and win the Jeff Ruby, in fact. But just to dive right in race six, number 11 Faith Factor is 15-1, and this horse is one on the Tapita Presque Isle, has solid races there, and without a doubt, we've seen the Presque Isle shippers do well back when their meet ended in September. Especially, they'd ship into Keeneland and be awesome, and I'm just going to kind of apply a similar thought to Turfway, and I'm going to stick with the Kentucky Downs horses as well. We're getting a little longer now. You know, if it's a layoff, you know, they're not as fresh as they were at Keeneland, but it's undeniable that the Kentucky Downs horses have run well. So definitely when looking for some prices, the KD and PID are going to be starting points for me in the running line.
Well, and I'm delighted you went to the sixth race, because that's one of the two races that I know that I'm going to wait for and play. The sixth goes off at 8:42 Eastern. It's a first level allowance going 6.5, and Faith Factor absolutely at a bulbous 15-1. I also thought that down inside Shasta Star for Buff, Shasta Star. That is 6-1, and I had the 6 and the 10. Yeah, 1-6. Here we go. 1-6, 10-11. Color Me Pretty. I thought at 7-2 demanded, you know, off of a pair of wins at Indiana off the turf, and then a 20 claimer at Kentucky Downs, and Dance or Stroll also. For Brooks, and you know, we certainly over the last few summers, you know, I've seen Jerry Brooks win in, you know, handfuls of races at Presque Isle, and Dancer Stroll 6-1. Jermaine Bridgemahan gets aboard. So for me, 1-6, 10-11 in that sixth race at Turfway tonight.
And I am 6-8-11. So we are pretty similar. I thought Little Skiff. Got a decent figure last out on dirt, has run well on turf, so seems to be some versatility there, and another one at 15-1.
Michelle Brafford sending out Little Skiff and Angel Serpa. The eighth race had caught my eye, and I printed the PPs before there were morning lines attached, and so I was excited when I found Ship It, and then I went and looked, and sure enough, ends up being second, actually being favored 3-1.
Favored, yeah.
And there's 2-7-2 shots. However, the aforementioned Vicky Oliver with Eventide, 10-1, down inside as the two horse. There's an entry for Jack Sisterson and Stephen Leister. But Eventide, anything close to that, 10-1, and that's the other horse for me with the 8, Ship It.
It would start for me with Trumpet Lily if she were to draw in.
Yes, if she gets in, sure.
Yeah, that. But just mention that. But, yeah, I think Eventide, 10-1, definitely a good price, good figure, turf. And, you know, it's tough to route on debut, and more so, I think, on turf, two turns, all that. So second career start for the barn. The price is right, and I agree with you. Ship It was definitely the name I gravitated toward first. And if Trumpet Lily doesn't get in, I could see her being the single, and then, you know, peppering others as opinions earlier might allow. But certainly the two, and I thought the entry, 8-1 morning line, was usable, as long as you're not using both. They're all three co-favorites. And wait for Nairobi with the apprentice up, who's won some races, including, I think, a couple for this trainer. Needs to improve a little bit speed-wise, but maybe with the weight break and shift to PETA, I'm on the Carpe Diem in the opener, so why not in the nightcap at a price?
Nice. And, you know, the one thing I think we should probably mention, Brad Cox in here, Demeter, the 9-7-2 co-second choice with Picasso Collection for Paulo Lobo. Brad Cox has had, you know, a year that is probably going to parlay into an Eclipse Award. And I imagine that, you know, the horses that he leaves here in Kentucky, you know, with this string, I expect he'll probably be very formidable, right? How do you not give extra consideration to the Cox horses this winter at Turfway?
Yeah, especially if, you know, there's no turf at Oaklawn. I know he is going to have a string, it sounded like, at Sam Houston, so that adds a turf option for his stable in the winter, but you know, I'd have to think he'd be thinking about what horses might fit the surface. And, you know, this one feels like an underlay to me. Others have been certainly faster on dirt. The turf races weren't terrible, but definitely well beaten in both. So maybe an underlay here, but agree with the overall macro thought that some of these, especially probably on the drop to get a win, and, you know, maybe a win for the female family, depending on who the owner breeder is, I think we'll see some odds on Wesley Ward style in some of these spots.
Anything else today?
Well, we talked about 6 and 8, so I'll touch on race 7 just to close out the late pick 3. But I thought Christian City on the outside for Scoot and Boot had a look. Temple City out of a Lemon Drop Kid mare. This one's never been on all weather, but that's certainly a pedigree I think can handle it. And Perry is got a win on this one last time, and he's ridden a few other times before that. And from the outside, hopefully not lose too much ground, because likes to press the pace without necessarily being on it. But 6-1, I think we're getting the right price.
Nice. How much Gulfstream action separately, since we got opening day down there too?
I did not look at Gulfstream, but I know my colleague Scott Shapiro is excited about it.
How are, in fact, on that topic, how are you and James and Scott, how are you guys going to break out winter coverage? What's the itinerary?
Yeah, so I'm sticking to Kentucky. So my expert picks will be in the Twin Spires app for Turfway every race day. So I'm looking forward to repping the home team here. James, of course, heavy Derby trail. I forget when his report usually starts coming out, but I know we're all looking forward to that. And Scott will definitely be in the Gulfstream and then Fairground Stakes state of mind.
Excellent. Well, Ed, I appreciate it. Great work by everybody this fall on the Churchill front, and we'll check in Wednesdays, and we'll cover everything, not just winter in Kentucky, but
plenty of racing. Well, you know, I'm looking forward to Sam Houston opening.
As am I. It's become, you know, really. In fact, we're going to talk to. I think we're talking to Steve Asmussen later, potentially. And we featured Sam Houston last winter, and expect to do so again. And the racing is, you know, really, really been good. I mean, they've done a tremendous job, Sam Houston. They truncated the meet and boosted purses. This program in Texas has been a smashing success, and not far off. I mean, there's really, based on what we're looking at right now, I mean, starting the way things are starting and the way New York, the way the aqueduct season is kicked off and should power through the winter, a lot of good racing yet to come. And to look forward to. Ed DeRosa, everybody. EJXD2. Ed, this was great. I appreciate it, and we'll talk next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Steve. Good luck, everyone, tonight.
Ed DeRosa, and look forward to seeing what a miniature dachshund looks like, because they seem pretty small to me to begin with. I guess this is like a pocket-sized dachshund. Take a top of the hour break, and we'll come back with Sid Fernando, Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. Hour two at the races here on SiriusXM.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
The exciting Southern California Thoroughbred Daytime Racing Circuit returns to Los Alamitos Racecourse with opening day of the LA County Fair meet set for Friday, December 4th. The meet will feature five exciting stakes races, headed by the Starlet on Saturday, December 5th, and the Los Alamitos Futurity on Saturday, December 19th. Recent winners of the Los Alamitos Futurity include the outstanding multiple stakes winners Improbable and Thousand Words. On weekdays, our first post will be at 1 p.m., while weekends will feature a 12:30 p.m. first post time. Plus, our wagering menu includes a pair of $1 pick fours, a traditional $2 pick six, and the popular 14% players pick five. Watch and wager on all of the great racing action on TVG, plus all other major ADW providers and at open satellite locations. And as we continue to follow our local guidelines, we'd like to thank all the great racing fans across